This is Art in Focus, brought to you by the McMullen Museum of Art at Boston College. My name is Megan Minahan, class of 2022, and a McMullen student ambassador. I'd like to welcome you in listening to the second episode in a series on the exhibition Mariano Variations on a Theme. This episode will feature a conversation between Boston College professors Kevin Lotery and Oliver Wunsch of the Department of Art, Art History, and Film.
Hello, listeners. Thanks for having us here for this conversation. I'm Professor Oliver Wunsch. I teach art history here at Boston College, and I specialize in 18th and 19th century European art. Most of my research deals in some way with artist materials and techniques. I'm actually on sabbatical right now. I'm finishing up a book about fragile and physically unstable art in the 18th century. And I'm also starting a new project about the materials and techniques that artists use to represent skin and skin color. So that's me, but let me hand things over to Professor Lotery for his intro.
Yeah, we eagerly anticipate both of your books, my friend. I am Professor Kevin Lotery. I'm also in the Art, Art History, and Film Department. I'm an art historian, and I focus primarily on 20th and 21st century art, with a special kind of interest on the decades just following the Second World War and the resonance of those decades with the present. I am currently working on a book that has to do with the transmission of Holocaust memory to new generations of descendants, as well as a second project on the British artist Richard Hamilton. In terms of my interests, I like all Professor Wunsch, I share an interest in cross-disciplinary research, and a lot of my work does seem to bleed out into other disciplines. This exhibition, I wouldn't say directly relates to my research. However, it has become quite a useful exhibition for my classes, which are focusing on modernism and the avant-garde from 1900 to 45. So I just wanted to say up front that the exhibition has been quite helpful for my students in learning the tools of visual analysis as well as the history. So we'll see if that comes up in our conversation, but I just wanted to mention that up front.
Yeah, that's a good segue to our chosen work. You know, as you were saying, for both of us, Mariano was really an unknown figure coming into the exhibition. And like you, Kevin, I was struck by the way that his work engages with the relationship between art and the public, the question that, well, a question that comes up in your research, actually, of can art gesture beyond an elite audience to reach a broader public? And for our chosen work, we decided we'd focus on actually a series of sketches that Mariano did called The History of Aviation. These are drawings for a planned mural, a mural that was to be part of a new airport in Havana. The airport was never built, and so the mural was never created. We just have these sketches. But I think for both of us, we were struck by the idea of creating a work of art for this public context, a work of art that wasn't just for an elite group of collectors, but reaching a broader audience. And that's something that I think for both of us in our classes and our research, that's an issue that comes up quite a bit. But I should just give a brief visual description of this work. It's from 1954 or thereabouts. It's an ink and watercolor drawing. All three of these sketches are ink and watercolor on board. And they're a combination of abstract and representational figures. And if you look at them closely, all three of them follow roughly the same structure. They follow a progression from left to right that tells a story, the story of the history of aviation. And on the far left, you can see in the upper left-hand corner, Icarus flying too close to the sun, his wings having melted and he's plunging to the ocean. Then you move a little further to the right, you see a later moment in the history of aviation, the invention of balloon flight in the 18th century. You see hot air balloons rising from the ground into the sky. A little further still to the right, you can make out a pair of figures seated at a table. It looks like they're maybe planning an aircraft, designing an aircraft, and above them you see a kind of schematic drawing of an airplane, perhaps what the two figures are planning. And then at the far right, you see the fruition of modern aviation with what looks to be a modern jetliner in the sky. So that's just a broad overview. But I think maybe we can talk a little bit now about the conceptual issues that spoke to both of us in this work.
You brought one, sorry to interrupt, Oliver, but yeah. You brought it up. I mean, that was a really wonderful description.
Thank you.
You started by making special note of that Icarus figure. That struck me, and I'm sure it struck you as well, as, you know, this is a mythical first moment of human flight, a myth of the first human, Daedalus, father of Icarus, who forged the waxen wings, right, in the Minotaur's labyrinth to escape BTW. And Daedalus escapes, but Icarus gets too excitable and excited and flies too close to the sun, as we all know, and plunges to Earth to his death. But it just struck me that the mural moves from the space of myth to a space of engineering. You described those people at the desk sort of plotting an aircraft. They're probably like engineers, right, or something. So it moves from, it includes both the mythic and the scientific, rational. And that just struck me as a curious, pretty cool aspect of this mural to include both, right, as one trajectory or something.
Absolutely, yeah, I was struck by that. That juxtaposition as well. Maybe on a somewhat less sophisticated level, I was into that detail simply because, as an art historian, it makes me think about the rich iconographic history of depictions of Daedalus and Icarus. Probably the most famous being Bruegel's representation of Icarus plunging into the ocean, really in the background of a landscape. And to me, this particular work, even though I knew nothing about Mariano coming into the exhibition, immediately triggered a number of art historical associations. So Bruegel on the one hand, and then also in a more modern context, I thought of Picasso's Guernica, a work that has a very different theme, very different message, but is similar in, well, one on a formal level, the mixture of abstract and representational forms, the construction of a large-scale mural for a public audience, Guernica being featured at the 1937 Paris International Exhibition. And both of those works, in an odd way, deal with the history of flight, but with a very, very different message. Picasso's Guernica being a representation of the Nazi German bombing of this small town in the Basque region of Spain, and Picasso conveying the inhumanity of that action. And I was wondering for you, Kevin, you know, Picasso is much more in your area of art historical expertise. Does that connection seem meaningful to you, or is that just me as an 18th, 19th century person making a kind of easy?
I'm kind of in awe of that comparison, Oliver. My first, like you, maybe to my shame, I did not know much at all about Mariano before we went together to the show. So we're in the process of learning, and what you just said helps me place him in the history of art, both in the long, deep history of Western art, back to Bruegel, And it's funny, right? Because I think you're right. It's almost like he's quoting the Bruegel painting, the figure of Icarus. It's like literally the same iconography that we see in that Bruegel painting. So well played, art historian friend. But your comparison with Picasso was even more, just now, was even more surprising and productive, I think, because I wouldn't have made that comparison. I've thought a lot about that mural. It's not technically a mural, it's a painting, but it's mural sized, right? The Guernica. But so it's like a mural built to travel. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But your comparison is kind of like a deep, sophisticated one, in the sense that they're, as you implied, they're both about aerial being or aerial existence. One, in Picasso's case, aerial destruction. Literally, the bombing of Guernica was like a, in addition to being a kind of war crime, was also a kind of scientific, like a horrible scientific experiment to see what the new technology of bombing would do to a civilian population, which makes it utterly more traumatic and horrible. But right. I think what you do is you uncover this interesting, I don't know, meditation, at least around these decades, on the role of aerial existence. One thing that actually made me think about this actually now is it's an even more striking comparison, because like Mariano's dealing with Icarus, there are traces of myth in Guernica as well. If you think of the bull and the horse up front, but primarily the bull, a kind of mythic, you know, the animal of Spain, right? So there's a kind of meditation on the clash, or maybe the violent clash of myth and rational technological systems, like bombing, you know, in both cases. I mean, another thing your comparison does is it brings the Mariano studies into a larger context of mural making from the 20s and 30s through the 50s. One thinks immediately of course, of Picasso and Guernica, but also of the Mexican muralists who were equally engaged as Mariano was in the radical project of building a communist society after a revolution. And to make, you know, this helps us understand, I think, why the mural form was important to Mariano in that moment. Like the Mexican muralists, the mural form was, as you began this talk with, was that form that could bring aesthetic experiences to the everyday lives of people in the street, in the subway, in the airport, rather than make them go to the privileged confines of the gallery or museum. The mural is that thing that brings the art into the space of everyday life and creates collectives of viewers in front of that work, which is, I chose that word strategically, seems to be quite a socialist imperative, right?
That's fascinating and helps us situate this work within the context of Cuban society in the 1950s, and why this project would have spoken to Mariano's political convictions. A lot of what you said really sticks with me. Just going back briefly to the Picasso comparison, I'm noticing, you know, you mentioned the horse and the bull and Picasso. I'm noticing that in the Mariano designs, this horse figure features in at least one, I think several of the studies. Between the Icarus scene and then the balloon scene, there is this horse figure with wings attached. I wonder if that's a conscious or unconscious call out to Picasso. But then to what you were just saying about mural painting as a way of establishing a kind of collective experience, a collective experience through group interaction with a work of art in public space. I was thinking how odd it is from our contemporary relationship with air travel, the idea of treating the airport as a site of collective socialist experience, because it's hard for me to think of an aspect of contemporary life more individualistic, more capitalistic than air flight, where you arrive at the airport, people are sorted by classes, you have, even at the security line, the express security line for the people who have paid more for their their first class tickets. And then once you get onto the airplane, everyone's paid different amounts for different levels of service on board the airplane. It's capitalism on steroids. Everything is broken down by your ability to pay for it. And I love looking at this mural because of how much it's at odds with that contemporary experience of flight. And, you know, now that the pandemic is easing up and people are starting to get back on planes, just on a everyday personal level, I think this mural has something to teach us about what air travel maybe could be if it weren't subject to such an extreme market-oriented logic.
You're totally right. I love that. I mean, it's hilarious, the way you phrase revealing. I mean, I think it reminds me, I think in like a footnote or somewhere in an essay of his, the great Marxist art historian, T.J. Clark, who we both have read extensively, he said somewhere in an aside, something like what you just said, where he's like, if you want to know I'm paraphrasing, if you want to know the structure of class consciousness and class identity in a culture, just look at how they board airplanes. And it's there in the most explicit way. And as you said, it's like so explicit, they're not even hiding it. First, second class. And people, you know, own it so strongly at the airport. It's kind of crazy the way we all are like, no, I got the right ticket, I'm boarding first. It's like our chance to like own this horrible system in a different way. Anyway, but you're right. And actually it's revealing in the sense that maybe what Mariano, or what we can take from Mariano today, and certainly what he was trying to do for this mural that would have been in a Havana airport, maybe he's trying to imagine an alternate future, right? Where maybe the question is, what is communistic air travel? Like, what would be an air travel that is based in the collective rather than the bourgeois individual subject who is classed by seat, row, leg room? Instead, what is like a communistic experience in the air based on collectivity, I don't know, utopian working, utopian human machine relations? I don't know.
I like that a lot. And I'm noticing at the far right end of at least two of the mural studies, there's a group of assembled people. Do you see that there beneath the plane?
Yep, I do, in the top right, very far right edge, yeah.
And I know later in Mariano's career, at the end of the exhibition, we see some of these crowd scenes where he's thinking about collectivity in terms of massing of human bodies. And I wonder if he's testing out something similar there with this assembled group to think about flight as a vehicle for new forms of collectivity rather than that individualistic experience.
Maybe that links back to that Icarus Daedalus thing you brought up at the beginning, because it's like Daedalus, the idea was to like, through technology, the wax, the wings, the feathers, make a new human being that flies. Mm. So maybe the communistic approach to air travel would be like, we have the possibility to make a new human collective, a new kind of relationship between each other, but also our machines. And that's why we see Icarus to the end there. I don't know, it's an interesting idea. You're right, I hadn't noticed that group at the end. Maybe they're saying goodbye to us as we fly away into some other
sort of consciousness, it's hard to read
subjectivity. Yeah. I mean, what do you think about we've talked a lot about subject matter. What do you think about the how, right? Like the technique and the form, the play of lines, I mean, these are very rich, and it does strike me that your Picasso comparison actually works quite well when you look at like the way drawing works here. It feels very Picasso-y to me. By the way, yeah. I call Picasso in my classes a kind of frenemy of us. He's sort of like sometimes our comrade and ally, and other times he's a deep rival antagonist. And maybe Mariano thought of him separately as a kind of father that had to be inhabited and destroyed and surpassed.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think about those lines in relation to Picasso, and to me they clearly evoke Picasso for the reasons you explain, this relationship between representation and abstraction. But to stick with the Guernica comparison, the lines seem to produce a different effect here, because in a work like Guernica, there's a real violence to the fragmentation produced by those acute angles and the breaking of form. Here, I don't see anything to indicate violence in that fracturing of planes, planes as in planar surfaces. To me, they echo instead the mechanics of the plane itself, these angles that have a mechanistic feel to them, even if we can't totally read what they represent.
They're kind of like jet streams too, maybe, right?
Yes, yes.
But in Guernica, it's like even the tools of painting, like drawing itself, become violent. And also like the merging of architecture, animal, and human in Guernica is a total violent thing. Like bombing reduces everything to these mixtures of horrible mutant figures of animal, creature, human, architecture, rubble, you know? But here it's different. And I guess what we're seeing, right, is a transition from, I don't know, to something, you know, we're obviously in, after the Second World War, into the Cold War, where technology, it needed to be not nightmarish only, but also something else. But in terms of the lines, you're right. It's the lines or the drawing. It's about becoming here, or like the possibilities of becoming something different, or having different movements, different rhythms, different flows, right? And that central figure in the study that features, I guess it's actually the only study with this figure, the kind of very graceful figure in the center below the hot air balloon, who's kind of holding it up like a kite.
Yes.
And I guess it's kind of an ambiguously gendered figure, which is nice, but also the lines, right? You can see a line swooping in from the right, past the right leg. It's just an abstract line. Maybe it's a jet stream. Then it enters the body and it becomes the contour line of the body. It starts to signify the torso and then the arm, and then it escapes free of the body again. And it just becomes like a abstract arrow pointing in a different way. That's very Picasso-y. That is a lesson Mariano's clearly learned from Picasso's analytic cubist works, right? That you can make, or from Paul Klee, but other great modernists, where you start to realize, well, I can make a line mean multiple things.
Yes,
at one and the same time, right? The same line can signify multiple things depending on its placement. Yeah.
Is Paul Klee the person who talks about taking a line for a walk?
Rock and roll, Oliver. Yes, yeah. You know your 20th century after all.
Well, thank you. I like that connection with Klee, because also maybe this is a little too neat of a connection, but taking a line for a walk, that's a phrase that captures the relationship between drawing and transportation. I mean, it's about the act of making a mark as an act of movement. And here we have not taking a line for a walk, but taking a line for a flight. And there's your jet stream comparison. I mean, the mural is making us think about flight as an aesthetic act, as something that creates marks, creates movements, creates new forms of aesthetic experience, not in that individualistic sense that we now think of air travel as, but in this collective sense.
That is really good, the Klee reference. I mean, Klee, I don't think ever would have made murals, but these studies do look like, the studies themselves look a lot like Klee works on paper. And the arrow for sure was a Klee, that was his thing, the arrow.
Yeah.
But the question you seem to be implying here, and which seems to be Mariana's question, is like, how can I make the basic tools of of painting or drawing, like making a line, how can I make that fuse with building a new world from technology, right? Mm-hmm. How can I make my line fuse with the line of the plane's jet stream? How can I make my labor as an artist fuse with the labor of the engineer and the pilot who guides these planes, right? I am also a worker and a producer in this culture. Mm-hmm. I just make artistic products. So I need to figure out ways of connection between these other forms of making and producing. But that helps us see what is going on here. Absolutely.
It's about the continued relevance of art to a modern society, a society that's undergoing tremendous technological change. When you were talking about how Mariano is thinking about how the career of the artist, how the process of making marks is consistent with modern technological forms of labor, it made me think he's trying to incorporate a profession that has a long tradition into contemporary life. And you know, I know we're running short on time now, but as we wrap up, I was wondering whether the fact that this mural is unfulfilled in some ways speaks to some of the continued irresolution around some of these problems. I mean, the irresolution, the difficulty of trying to articulate what is the place of the artist in a society in which labor is increasingly subject to technological mediation, where the act of creating something with your hands is increasingly seen as a kind of relic of an older era. This mural is trying to find a way out of that problem. I wonder whether there's something open-ended in the fact that it didn't actually happen that allows us to continue thinking about these problems today.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, it's like the mural is a funny form, right? It is the most ancient, potentially. Then it becomes a key format in the Renaissance, fresco painting, etc. Then it becomes, again, a key form in the 20th century in revolutionary cultures like Mexico, Soviet Union even, and Cuba. Also in parts of Europe. And it does seem to be, again, not to harp on this, but the mural is that form where you can meditate on the continued relevance of the age-old techniques of art, like fresco painting, and the new spaces of public experience, like the airport. It's like a way of collapsing the age-old and the technological present somehow.
Yeah.
Or at least it's where those contradictions come up, you know? And that is, I sort of think we've landed, so to speak, or taken off in an interesting direction. And whether the fact that it's unfulfilled, yeah, I mean, it's...
I mean, would you say in contemporary art now, what is the status of public art, of these types of public commissions designed for a wide audience? Is that a vibrant area of contemporary production, or is it now seen as a vestige of a different paradigm where
Yeah, I think that is a really good question, and that's like one of the questions. I think that honestly it's one of the questions that I think about with my students. I don't think that the mural form would have its potency today, right? I mean, when we talk about collectives, mural, it's clear, or in the cinema, it's clear, we're all seeing the same image together at the same time. Within our theory, we call that simultaneous collective reception, right? We are all seeing, not as individuals, but as a collective, the same visual material. Today, we can't assume any longer we are all together in the same physical space. we know, just by the way we're conducting this conversation, that we're always already fragmented between our physical bodies and the technological immaterial spaces in which we communicate and exist, whether on social media, whether on Zoom, whether just looking at our phones, you know, texting. We are always already picked apart and distributed across technological space and physical space at the same time. The mural form, we have to ask, can it survive that situation, which was so premised on physical presence in front of the work? If it does survive, if it will survive, it will have to adjust itself, right? It will have to take into account the new technological reality we live in. So I haven't seen a lot of mural work per se. When I do, for example, I think that there were recent commissions at the new terminal in JFK in New York that involved contemporary artists, now that you reminded me of that. But when I see that, what I think immediately is, it's decoration, it's ornament. It's ornament for precisely what you opened the conversation with, a kind of atomized, alienated subjectivity that just travels through the world from one non-space to the next and is completely on his or her own, no collectivity, no communication. They're ornaments, murals in airports now, right? They simply ornament what exists, or they ornament power. So I don't know. I think artists are thinking about new ways to, obviously always thinking about new ways to make contact with publics that are outside the privileged realm of art. And it's a continued challenge. And they continue to invent new mediums. The mural form at one point was an invention that could do that. Now it probably can't. But there's still value in returning to that moment and asking what was at stake. Don't you think?
Absolutely. That's an amazing account of the challenges that murals and public art more generally face in a contemporary world where we can all carefully curate our own media consumption. We all have our individualized Netflix streams that are tailored to our tastes based on some hidden algorithm where we can no longer be sure that we watch anything that our neighbor has seen, that the person on the bus next to us has seen. All of our cultural consumption is specific to us. And just as you're saying, that is a tremendous challenge to artists who have the types of ambitions that Mariano has. But in a way, it also speaks to how urgent and necessary it is to have artists who have that ambition now. And let's hope that they can produce new forms of collectivity that we haven't anticipated, perhaps reimagining the mural form once more.
Yeah, to take into account that algorithm. What is it doing to us? What is its laws? And maybe the question is, like Mariano was asking, what is a communistic experience of air flight and air travel? I don't even want to go there. The algorithm might be beyond that question, but there it is. I'll just let it be there. I shouldn't have followed up that grand and perfect concluding remarks from you, Oliver.
No, this has been great. I'm so glad we had the chance to have this conversation. And likewise.
All right. Well, I think we'll sign off there and say goodbye.
Thanks, everyone, and thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye.
That concludes this episode of Art in Focus. Thank you for listening, and be sure to visit The Terrace, the Macmillan Student Publications page, to find more episodes in the series. This episode was produced by Rachel Brody, the Macmillan Graduate Assistant and a doctoral candidate in the History Department. It was mixed and edited by Megan Minahan. Thanks to Rachel Chamberlain, the Macmillan Manager of Education, and members of our digital team, Caitlin Park and Sasha Wong.